there's far too many of you dying.
I think anyone who puckers up their lips and presses it against their boss's buttocks and then smooches is an ass kisser.
I seem to be inept at everything except my work. I'm good at my work. So I confine myself to that. All I want out of life is a 30 share and a 20 rating.
The man's enlarged my mind. He's a poet, warrior in the classic sense. I'm a little man. I'm a little man. He's a great man.
Think of it as colors. There's black and there's white. And in between is mostly gray. That's us. Now, gray is a tough color because it's not as simple as black and white. And for the media, certainly not as interesting. But it's who we are.
So I'm done.
He's got big balls.
You know, if you're going bear hunting, you better be prepared to go get the bear.
Are you hungry or are you starving?
Get your dadgum chili hot, right, boys? Get that chili hot.
This is your Stop the Cousins Savagery Steamroller. I want to get off. Leader Fan Radio Network.
Get off me.
KFAN.com. 2 minutes, 35 seconds past the hour, 3 o'clock Central Daylight Saving Time. We welcome you back to what we lovingly call Bumper to Bumper. It's a 3.5 hour tour on an absolutely gorgeous Tuesday afternoon here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and, of course, St. Louis Park. My name is Dan Barrero. I host the program. Gardzi is the producer of today's broadcast, and we thank you for your participation in this particular show. It is, we got a Calcutta Clipper here in St. Louis Park right now. And I don't know if any of you have spent any time on the roads. They're a disaster. It's what they call in the business that greasy snow.
Yeah.
I know people want to say it's because it's the first snowfall, and I think some of it is that. But it's slick as hell, in my experience, trying to go from home to Eden Prairie, and then from Eden Prairie to St. Louis Park. I've tried surface roads. I tried highway, and it was tense. Not gonna lie to you.
I believe it.
It looks like right here in St. Louis Park, it's snowing as hard as it has been.
Yeah.
The entire day.
Well, I was supposed to be following.
Oh, there's some bitterness there, by the way,
right.
Fox 9 about you.
Well,
I'm just saying. I'm not trying to tattle or anything on them, but they were not. They got this whole. They're trying to do some Fox 9 Enough Said promos for us.
I know.
But they don't trust us enough to allow us in the newsroom.
Right.
So they got us set up basically in a garage.
Right.
And they got all the cameras set up just for us.
Yeah.
And then you say, can't make it. Sorry.
Let me ask you this.
I had to hold PJ Fleck's hand.
No.
Oh.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
I was perfectly willing to go out there. Who was going to be sitting with you? Knowing what we know now.
Shouldn't have been an either or.
Of course it wasn't either or.
If you'd have been done on time with PJ, you'd have been fine.
But you got delayed. No, it wasn't PJ.
It wasn't?
No. Oh. It was gopher-related stuff. But it wasn't PJ.
Well, everything, by definition, everything, you're saying not gopher football related?
No, it was gopher football
related.
Well,
that's everything. Then that's PJ.
You think I would be in the studio had I left at 2 o'clock from Fox 9?
Yes. I think it would be close. I think you would have, put it this way, you would probably not have had time to do the most important production duty you have today.
Thank you.
It was supposed to be yesterday.
Yeah.
But for obvious reasons, the program went in a different direction. I think most people who watched Sunday's game could figure it out, but we weren't going to forget about it. I wasn't going to forget about it. So you wouldn't have been able to get that production done.
I would not have.
You'd have been here probably about 10 to 3.
And that for me, it was not going to work.
Yeah. All right. I'll take your word for it.
So I hope we don't lose the Fox Now. I hope I don't lose it because you did it. So
I did it. And I have to admit, I did kind of rub it in that I was there and you weren't. I'm not going to lie to you.
That's fair. That's fine. By the way, on the production bit,
yes.
I think we're being a little bit too one-sided on the team. I was thinking about that today. Well, people are going to know soon what we're talking about. And I'm guessing, like you say, they could guess. But it's always centered usually on one side of the ball. Every once in a while, we've gone over to the second one. I think we can start doing both.
You think so?
I think we just mix and match both of them.
Yeah.
We'll see. Because neither one bathed themselves in glory this past Sunday.
No, that's very true. You're exactly right. I mean, look, if you want to do the extra production work,
it's
we
not
can
that
go
much.
To the other side of the ball tomorrow.
And
that wouldn't be a problem.
What we might have to do is also mix in, well, I'll just tell you, great moments in a kick-ass special teams
because
Zimmer ripped the onside kicks as well. So we'll do great moments.
Forgot about that.
We'll do great moments in a kick-ass special teams.
Does he not understand that nobody, well, other than Dallas against Atlanta, successfully recovers an onside kick, the kicking team? It just doesn't happen anymore.
It doesn't happen anymore.
No, the way the rules are set up and all that, it's just they're not going to happen, I wouldn't think.
Anyway,
I was saying, a Power Pack broadcast today. I'm glad you put the time in on Johnny Athletic because I didn't offer my usual 2:45 tweet on the lineup today. Johnny Athletic will join at 5:15 this evening. Johnny Athletic at 5:15. Grant in your hand, four opportunities, thanks to our friends at Wixon Jewelers. We still are out at 6 today?
No, we're not.
I didn't think we were because...
You're right.
There's no
under siege.
No underground with Kirk Cousins this week, is there?
My mistake. That's bad habits.
I was almost hoping that I was wrong and that you were right.
No,
and
I'm
that
wrong.
You were just trying to give me a nice surprise.
Nope, that will return next week.
So it's 6:30.
Yeah.
So it is a 3.5 hour total.
So we're going the distance.
Which is exactly what I said early in the at the start of the broadcast. I did also mention that we are indeed your Stop the Cousins Savagery Steamroller, I Want to Get Off leader. It's funny how, other than you, perhaps, the Kirk Oboes, how they have turned on their guy just savagely, almost as if they want you to forget that they ever were Kirk Oboes. He's gone from being better than you think to being apparently the worst quarterback to quarterback for the Vikings in the last 30 years. And now we got analytics about him missing a receiver here or about making a bad read there, or what's the headline I'm looking at here? See if I can find it, because I think it's from it's either from today's paper. Well, here's one. NFL quarterbacks are getting intercepted less than ever. Kirk Cousins leads the league with 10 in 6 games. I got that one for me. Where's the other one I had? There was another really good one. Did it disappear on me? Well, it basically was an attempt to lay out, I think it was also via StarTribune.com, that laid out the number of bad decisions that the quarterback made in this last game. I'm not here to say they were good decisions, but here's what I am here to tell you. You got to stop blaming Kirk for basically being Kirk. At some point, the onus is on this organization for not only investing in him, but doubling down on the investment to the degree that no matter what salary cap relief they got, they can't get rid of him next year. It's even going to be a reach to get rid of him in 2022. I think it's a $40 million cap hit next year.
Mm.
And I think it's still $10 million the year after that. Now, that might be doable, but that's still not good. At some point, people have to... I mean, Kirk Cousins is who he is. Sometimes he's above average, and he has stretches where you go, you know, maybe this can work. And then you got other times where you go, where did he come from? Why would you invest extra in this guy? What's going to change? It doesn't matter how much tennis he plays. It doesn't matter how much he tries to learn how to be an off-schedule quarterback. It's just not in him. especially, as I've said from the beginning, and this too isn't his fault. He's stuck with a mediocre offensive line, which from the beginning never made sense, with a quarterback who needs to be on schedule and needs to have a clean pocket. So you can mock him if you'd like. We've all done the jokes. I did a few of them. Somebody had a meme where it's the guy carrying like 11 car wash related items, three pails, a bucket, a water spritzer hose, and all that, and it all comes flying out. I mean, I participated in it. I don't deny it on Sunday because it was well played, but they chose to not only commit to him, but to double down. Don't email me with, but what else are you going to do? Not my job. My job is to tell you that if this is who you felt like you had to commit to, you blundered. You made a significant mistake. And now you're at a point where your season is over, which we didn't, for obvious reasons, talk about in a lot of detail yesterday. And you can't even say, well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to sprinkle in the backup. Or we're going to sprinkle in our number three guy because we're intrigued by him. Can't even do that because we don't have guys like that. Why do we have a meaningless backup? Well, in part because we spent so much money on the starter. And he has been healthy. That's sadly his greatest strength is his durability. He's as durable as Brett Favre, for God's sake. But he might not be quite as good. Might not be quite as good a riverboat gambler.
Not trending that way.
No. And we talked about two things on sermons. I'm not going to pretend that I picked Atlanta to win. I didn't. But I did say there's one way for this game to get stolen. Offense turns the ball over. What happens on the first play from scrimmage? An awful, probably about as bad an interception.
It was a bad throw.
As your guy's ever thrown. And look, the game isn't over then. Doesn't have to be, but it did seem to set a tone. Cast a pall over the People's Stadium. Atlanta got further aroused and said, yeah, this is our day. This might be our day. And it was their day. By the way, what was the final score?
Oh, man.
Was it 40-23?
I think that's right, yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, it was 40-7. Anybody who pretends that was a 40-23 game is paying homage to the late, great Sid Hartman, what he would write about it. Because that was, all right, if you want to be technical, they got a late touchdown, too.
Yeah.
33-7. I'll call it 33-7 at best. That's all that game was. It was nowhere near as close as the final score indicated. And how do you do this? You know, again, we might be mocking one side of the ball today because it's become the bit gone all the way back to when Brad Childress said it, but how do you give up on fourth and short 35 and 40-yard touchdowns? Fourth and short! How does that happen? That happens to a bad football team. Now, that's not Kirk Cousins' fault.
It's not.
It really isn't, although it should be reminded that Seattle got back in the game when? Started with the Cousins INT. Even the defensive coordinator told us that. He wasn't meaning to rip Kirk, but that's what it was. So, you know, have at it. Do your little Kirk memes and mock him, and he's too dull. He's milk toast. He doesn't really, you know, he's just not a guy you rally around. Not a bad guy, but you just don't rally around him. And now we're finding out all this stuff about he throws too early, he throws too late, he can't see the field very well. And I'm going, yeah! But that doesn't explain this team's the utter commitment to him. That's on management. That's on Spielman. That's on even Mike Zimmer for hating the predecessor so much. Who was the predecessor to Kirk Cousins?
Case Keenum?
Case Keenum.
Our guy?
He hated him. He hated him.
He got nervous. He was nervous about him. Too nervous.
Might be. Think he's nervous right now about
I think we're past nervous.
Kirk? We probably are past nervous at this particular point. So there you have it. It's a mess. And I'm actually here today to defend Cousins from the savagery and to say, look someplace else, man. The Vikings were not forced to take him. I mean, Kirk Cousins was available, and they went out and they grabbed him, correct?
Yeah, free agent.
They went and they grabbed him. No one was holding a gun to their heads when they made that decision. And certainly nobody was holding a gun to their head when they decided to extend him for two more years, meaning you're stuck with him. This organization is stuck with him for, well, the rest of this season and all of 2021. Somebody called into Wineline and said, well, you think he would take a pay cut?
Good luck.
Yeah, this is not going to happen. And you're not going to trade. Who's going to take this contract? Who in their right minds in the National Football League? Is David Kahn going to run an NFL team? Then maybe. But other than that, it's not going to happen. You're stuck with him because you doubled down on him. He is what he is. He's not a horrible quarterback. He's not as bad as he played last week. But he's capable of that kind of badness. We've seen that kind of badness before. And he's not good often enough with a crappy offensive line. So we are where we are. Look out the window, man. That's the future. Snownami and a sports abyss. Or could there be an opening? Well, we'll discuss that in more detail in a minute. But first,
the Fan and Wixon Jewelers want to give you a shot to put a grand in your hand. It's our national cash contest. Text the keyword love to 200-200. That's your entry for the 3 o'clock hour. Text the keyword love to 200-200.
Kick-ass offense.
Herb Smith in motion. Cousins goes play action from under center. He'll whip one over the middle, intercepted immediately. First pass picked off Deion Jones. Deion Jones turns up to the 40 near side to the 35, and he's out of bounds at about the 27-yard line. Eighth interception this season for Cousins on the first play of the game.
Join us again for another famous moment in a
kick-ass.
This fall and winter, which apparently is here, Michelob Golden Light wants to sponsor your rec hockey team, covering league dues, custom jerseys, and sportswear from Soda Stick. To learn more about how you can win a golden sponsorship for your team, head to KFAN.com and make the keyword contest.
Trying to figure out where you are. Always going nowhere.
Bradshaw and Brian inbox has been rebooted. You can reach us via booth, B-O-O-T-H at KFAN.com. More than happy to accept via the Bradshaw and Brian inbox your own weather-related woes, because I have a feeling you've had them, and you'll probably continue to have them as we approach rush hour. I know rush hour in the COVID-19 winter of our discontent isn't what it once was, but it's a lot more crowded than it was early when we shut down, far more dramatically than we are now, and we're heading into close to that. So that might be problematic today as well. Johnny Athletic is scheduled to join us at 5:15 this very afternoon. I mentioned one of the subjects we got into on Sunday regarding the Vikings and the one way to allow Atlanta to get back into it. By the way, did you get the do you have the Zim soundbite for after the game when Greg Coleman asked him about the head coach making a pretty unusual decision for him?
Yeah.
Generally, when he wins the toss, he defers. He prefers to put his defense out there on the field early, much to my chagrin. I sometimes, depending on the situation, say, make a statement with your offense. Get up 7-0. And especially in this game, I think it made all the sense in the world. I was shocked when I saw he was going to do that at the start of the game, but I figured, yeah, if not now, when? Atlanta's defense has been historically bad. You don't have Dalvin Cook, but you still have some other pieces. So, yeah, throw your offense out there. It, of course, went badly because of the pick on the very first play into quadruple coverage.
Yeah.
By your favorite quarterback.
Well, I was thrown behind whoever it was supposed to be for, or hideous, underneath Adam Thielen. I actually put it in a great moments donut, but okay, we can play it.
All right, let's play it.
Kick-ass offense.
You know, from the start, you win the toss, you took the ball, you normally defer. What was the thinking behind that? Well, I knew that the first play we're going to kind of take a shot, and so I wanted to try and get things going a little bit, but you can bet we'll never do that again.
Join us again for another famous moment in
kick-ass offense.
Well, I'm not the first to say it, but couldn't you, then, the next time you got the ball, use the same play that you thought gave you a chance to do something special? Did we not do that, or did we audible out of it, or am I forgetting? I don't even remember. I know it was three and out the second series.
It was, yep. They always script the first 15, right? That's the cliche. We always hear that, allegedly.
Yeah, right.
So I think it could almost be like Common starting over.
Ah, yeah.
You
okay.
know,
on the golf course?
If he bogeys hole one,
right.
Typically he's just going back and he's going to play again. He's going to tee it up at one, and that's going to start his round. I think you could probably do the same thing. I don't remember really what they did that next three and out. We could get the game, the play-by-play.
It might have been a couple of runs.
Nothing was, it wasn't very effective.
No.
But I think they tried to get it to Irv early, too, on one of those. Bootleg, Lieber talked about that yesterday. But, yeah, you could, I think, do the common man and just say, Gary, whatever we had in the first 15, just do that same thing again, and hopefully Kirk makes a better throw.
Does anybody now argue with me when, in the middle of the week, I said, if Dalvin Cook is healthy, you play him? Again, I fully expected the Vikings to win anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I also felt like we're not good enough and dominant enough to where you go, you know what? We don't need him for this game. Let's play it safe. If he's not healthy, you don't play him. And if you play him and rush him, you run the risk that you're going to lose him for 6 weeks, then you sit him. But the idea that we were, again, it's because people celebrated that Seattle game like we won it. I'm surprised we didn't have a bleeping parade. Socially distanced, of course.
Yeah.
The other subject I got into on Sunday was, okay, let's play out the worst case scenario from a Viking standpoint. Let's say somehow they do the unthinkable today. They do the unconscionable today. They lose. And they fall to 1-5. And their season is over. I already felt it 2 weeks before, but it's over now. Is it possible, given that the Minnesota Golden Gophers were starting their Big Ten season this coming Saturday at home on national TV, is the door open to this for the first time in a half a century becoming a Gophers town once again? That was the bit on Sunday. And I got laughed at, I got mocked, I got ridiculed, and I admit, nothing changes that fast. The loyalty to the Vikings was built up over decades, right? I understand that. But I do think the unusual circumstance of the Vikings struggling, and it was going to be full-on past struggle if they lost to Atlanta, because at that point they hadn't, and they did. And the fact that instead of starting a college season with a cream puff, you know, with a non-conference game, even if it's not a bad opponent that nobody pays attention to, you have a chance to get right on top of it playing a legitimate opponent on national TV at home.
Why not?
Why not? To build upon how you finished last season as well. Now, Michigan comes in here and beats you by 17, or maybe even beat you at all. That'll take some of the starch out of that. It could end pretty quickly, but everything feels different in the COVID-19 2020 winter of our discontent, where you go, anything can happen now. We're desperate. We know that the hockey season is not close to starting. We know the NBA season is not close to starting. We don't even, quite frankly, care when the NBA season starts on the basis of what we haven't established here.
We're on the clock, though.
We are on the clock. We know that. Minnesota Wild might be intriguing just because of all the changes they've made.
But, different.
But we don't have anything done yet. Twins obviously are done. Lynx are done. And if the Vikings are also done, that's what we spend our fall obsessing over. Could it happen? There was a time, and I got into this Sunday as well, when football was king here, but it was college football.
I'm still in love with
it. It goes back to, obviously, the 50s and 60s,
mm-hmm.
even further back. But, you know, the Vikings didn't get here until the early 60s. There were a lot of Green Bay Packers fans here before that because that was
That's right.
the only team close. Or some cases, it might have been Bears fans, whatever. the problem we've had. What's changed? Well, it's the Vikings have been tended to be more relevant far more consistently, even if they've broken our hearts. And the Gophers have tended to be hideous at times, make a little bit of a jump at times, tease us at times, but really not sustain anything. And that gets to the other half of the Gophers discussion, which we're going to continue the rest of this week, leading all the way up to the game, although I'm taking Thursday and Friday off. I'm sure you're going to be all over it.
Yeah.
When I'm gone, is that you have a different burden now for this team. And it may not even be fair, especially not knowing who's going to play and who isn't, and all the COVID-19 ramifications of the bizarreness of this season. That might not make it fair, but now there, believe it or not, is, and this is a compliment to the program, an expectation that, all right, we're going to build on what we started last year. The best programs accept it. They don't blink. Even if it's something new, they say, yeah, this is fun. This is where you want to be. You want people to be annoyed when you lose, not apathetic. And so let's see where we can go with this thing this year. On the other hand, it means other teams are paying more attention to you. You're not the little engine that could that's coming out of nowhere anymore. And there's a little more pressure. The collars get tighter. I think it's fair to say. I guess not really collars when it comes to football players, but you get what I mean. So all of that, I think, is what makes it intriguing. But we've never had this confluence of circumstances, even for a short window, of the Vikings being this lost and with this many open questions and the Gophers coming off the kind of season they had with belief that maybe we have discovered or rediscovered electricity here and a season that has no preamble. You're in the deep end right from the start, and it's not, I don't know where Michigan is ranked. Are they even ranked?
Yes, they're ranked in the top 20.
Oh, are they? Okay.
Yeah.
So a lot of people still aren't sure they're great, but the fact is we know the program, and they are ranked. And if you start by beating Michigan, you're going to have more people rowing the boat. It's as simple as that. It's true. So there is in the short run for this season a really fine opportunity for this team to do something with it.
Yeah.
Whether they will. And to me, again, that should intrigue them. My guess is PJ loves that. That PJ would absolutely, he wants to dive into the deep end. I said, yeah, bring it on. We'll love having that heat, because then it means that there's more interest and there's maybe a little bit more belief. Even though last season may have been historic, but it's what you do afterwards that's really going to tell the tale about whether something substantively different is taking place here. I'm sure it's a subject we'll get into with Mace. Is that tomorrow?
3:55.
Mace in your face tomorrow.
Yes.
First time in, well, we had him on a few times by phone, but first time back in the regular rotation.
Correct? Exactly right.
So I'm looking forward to getting his views on that.
He's fired
as well.
Up. I was texting with him a little bit earlier
that's
this
great.
Morning. I think he's ready to go.
Are there any other intriguing games the first weekend? Is it just ours? I think it's just ours.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Yes.
There's a Friday night game, including Illinois, which I assume... Although Illinois, did they finish like they might be turning something a little bit? No.
How dare you not remember their... What's the bowl called, even? The one that's in San Francisco. I don't even
know. Micron PC Bowl?
No, it's not the Micron PC Bowl. Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl? No, I can't remember.
The Cow Palace Bowl?
Not the Cow Palace Bowl. They went to a bowl game last year.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
They went on a little bit of a run. They beat Wisconsin last year.
Yeah, they did. It got weird.
The only other game that people are kind of curious about, I think, in the Big Ten is Nebraska-Ohio State, because, number one, everybody wants to see how good Ohio State is. Because they're... Part of the reason they wanted to play is because they think they have a national championship-type team this year with Justin Fields, a quarterback, and all the talent that they always have. And Nebraska, to see if they're going to be any better than they've been the last couple of years with Scott Frost. But in the Big Ten, this is the ballgame. This is absolutely the ballgame.
Yeah.
Gophers in Michigan.
It is. Who'd have thunk it?
I'm curious. The only buzzkill, not to be Danny Downer.
Well, save it.
Okay.
Save the buzzkill. Let's get a break so we don't get too far behind. We'll give you a chance to weigh in on all this so-called window of opportunity. And as I mentioned, still several chances, three chances to put a grand in your hand. We will name today's tsunami. I think this will be the earliest we've ever named one, correct?
It's got to be close.
I don't think. I mean, what's the date? It's October 20th, for God's sake. It's not even. We're 11 days short of Halloween.
And now, famous moments in a
kick-ass offense.
Three receivers right, two left. Cousins, flare right, and it's caught by DD. Reaches the ball out for the first down. He did not get it. Missed it by a yard.
Join us again for another famous moment in a...
Hit the Fan.
I hope you didn't get yourself caught in this tsunami. Are you pretty much able to hunker down at home today, or have you found yourself in the middle of some traffic snarls?
No, hunker down today, Dan, but certainly out there shoveling. So, I'm bearing the brunt of it in other ways, but certainly glad I'm not out on the roads right now. I think I was telling Guardsy, I think you have the right idea. Just grab a hotel.
Yeah.
Just, you know, put your feet up. And don't mess with it out there today. It seems pretty gnarly.
It's extremely wet snow, right? Isn't that the dangerous snow to shovel? I mean, I hope you...
Very dangerous.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I went out early, and so I got the first layer up. I'm going to have to go out again.
Yeah, this is nuts.
If I had waited, you know, the snowblower is going to be toast and all of that. So, we're you know, this isn't my first one. I've done this before.
No,
so
you certainly have. We got a Phoenix Suns proposed trade that does not involve Devin Booker. You may have already heard about this. This comes out of the Arizona Republic, and it's written by, let me see if I can get the name, Jeremy Clough, Clough, Arizona Republic.
Okay.
And Jeremy writes that shortly after the Wolves won the lottery for the number one overall pick, that speculation began running rampant right then because of Devin Booker, because everybody thinks we want Booker and that Booker's available and we don't have to give up much to get him. Now, the premise here is that Booker is off the table, that Phoenix is not going to move him, but that there is still a belief on the part of Jeremy Clough that there's a workable deal that might interest both teams. So I'll throw out to you what he suggests. Could the Suns land the number one pick for Minnesota and not have to give up Booker, which they are not going to do no matter what the speculation says? He says yes. Well, actually, he quotes another writer as saying yes.
Oh, please.
Somebody from Bleacher Report, Greg Swartz, who recently proposed what he called, this is hard news, I'm not going to lie to you, what he called a realistic trade involving the Wolves and the number one pick in that draft. The proposal involves the Suns sending their number 10 overall pick in round one. Forward Kelly...
Do it to me, Dan.
Is it pronounced Oubre? Kelly Oubre?
Oubre.
A junior. And point guard Ty Jerome to Minnesota in exchange for the number one overall pick. And power forward James Johnson. Your thoughts?
Well, come on, Dan. You know, if we're getting a point guard from Phoenix... You know the point guard that we need to get from Phoenix. I'll give the number one pick and Towns for Ricky Rubio.
Get him back.
Straight up.
Yeah.
So let's do it. So here's what I can tell you. That concoction obviously is not sourced in any sort of...
Doesn't appear to be.
Real way.
Yeah.
But in talking to my actual real league sources... there is a belief that Phoenix is interested in making deals, including Kelly Oubre, and trying to kind of improve a roster that finished the bubble 8-0, and everyone's really happy over there about the possible direction of their franchise. Now, is 10 Oubre and Ty Jerome enough to get up to number one? Probably not. That's my guess, is that the Wolves would need more from the Suns.
What else do they have?
Drop that far back. That's it. They don't. Yeah. I mean, they have Rubio. You know, you have Booker and Ayton. They have some, actually, I will say this, Dan. They have some really nice young players. Cam Johnson, Bridges, a couple guys that are quality players, but they probably don't want to part with those guys because they think that that's part of their core. Mm-hmm. So if Oubre is a target, which he is a really good player, and I think he would fit in nicely with the Wolves, I think it's more realistic to use the 17 pick
yeah.
and some other filler to go after Kelly Oubre rather than parting with the number one pick for that.
Hmm. Okay. Ty Jerome, I don't even know who that is. Is he any good?
He played for Virginia. Kevin Seifert would love him. You know, and he's okay. He's a decent little player, but Oubre and the 10 pick obviously would be the big pieces you would get back, and I think Oubre has some contract stuff you'd have to work through as well. But Oubre is a quality player that can be a starter on a good team. So you'd look at it, but I will tell you this, that the Wolves obviously are very much interested in shopping the pick, and they are combing the league looking for options. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that they call Phoenix,
yeah.
But I think it would take more for that number one pick than that package that would be offered.
If we end up keeping the pick, give me the number you'd assign 0 to 10 that we would draft LaMelo Ball.
I think it's on the lower end of that scale. Oh. You know, maybe 4 or 5.
Okay.
I do think that, you know, there's obviously a lot of people who like Ball, but you know, the thing that has been my head scratcher when I fit here with Ball is that, you know, everyone says, well, you can just move D'Angelo Russell off the ball and give LaMelo the point guard duties. Well, no, D'Angelo Russell wants to be the point guard here, and he wants the ball in his hands all the time.
I thought we wanted to win. I thought the new deal was with the sort of open dialogue we have among our front office and our players, it was all about whatever it takes to win. Is that already out the window?
No, I don't think so, because I think that there would be real doubts about whether you could win that one with LaMelo Ball that way. So so I think that I'm not ruling it out, but my estimation, we had something at the Athletic, a beat writer mock draft today, where I picked LaMelo Ball for number one. But I picked that because I think if they want to trade that pick or eventually move move that pick for assets down the road, that Ball is the most movable of the guys at the top. So I think if they pick a player to stay and to try and develop, I think Anthony Edwards might be the pick there over Ball.
Okay.
But if they choose LaMelo Ball, it might be a shorter term kind of a situation.
Is it fair to say, I mean, you covered a lot of games, and so you most of that time, Sid was obviously not as active as he had been earlier in his career, but he was pretty much a staple on the sidelines there in that side press area, seemed to be there almost for every game. So did you have any, I mean, given how difficult it was for him in his last several years to hear, you know, even have a carry on conversation, especially in a loud place. Well, I use that term advisedly. It was Target Center. did you get much opportunity to sort of, you know, bond with him, understand him, or any interesting observations about what you saw in a period where he wasn't quite as front and center the main attraction as it were from a media standpoint?
Yeah, I did, Dan. And, you know, like I think a lot of people have shared, I mean, earlier on in his life, like in his 80s and 70s and 60s, you knew that Sid was kind of a tyrant and kind of a ruled with an iron fist and could make things difficult for other reporters and often felt threatened by the competition, either at his own paper or elsewhere, and could be really tough to deal with. By the time I came on to the scene in the media market here, and this is going almost 20 years now, which is kind of crazy to say, Dan, but he had started to soften. And certainly over the last 10 years, he was much more open and amenable, I think, than he was earlier in his career. And I think as I got more established here and had a little success and kind of became more entrenched, he really was very kind to me, and he would pull me aside at Wolves games, and we would have long conversations about the direction of the franchise. He would tell me stories about his Lakers days and tell me what he thought about this coach or that player. And so we talked a lot. We had a, I would say, a very good relationship.
That sounds like Sid.
You know, I would say I got to.
I kind of get a kick out of it, but I don't think we can continue it.
Well, people are already dealing with a snowstorm out there.
I mean, it was extending whatever he was saying. I mean, it was milking it, right? Yeah, he's gone. I think we're going to have to go back to the... Well, I'll tell you what, we need to break anyway.
Yeah,
he's calling. It sounds like he's calling us. We'll pause. We'll let him continue his thought about his own interactions with Sid over the years. We'll get to some Vikings nonsense and maybe even some Golden Gopher discussion with Johnny F.
FAN.
Tune in to hear Marnie Gellner with the Power Trip Morning Show every Wednesday morning at 7:30, thanks to our friends at Shields of Eden Prairie.
We're going to try the old-fashioned approach in chatting in our second segment with Johnny Athletic. Sometimes Opal works swimmingly. Sometimes it gets funky. Maybe the Snownami has some impact on it. I'm not sure. We will be naming the Snownami by the end of today's program. But Johnny Athletic is indeed back with us. You were in the middle of telling us about some of the conversations that you had with Sid, largely at Timberwolves games, correct?
Yeah, sorry. And long story short, he was very kind and very open with me. And I think as I got a little more established, he was, you know, always pulling me aside, telling me about his Laker days, asking me what I thought about this coach. What do you think about what did I think about what he had heard about this situation or that? And so we had a lot of really good extended conversations over the years. And so, I was lucky, I think, to come along at a time when he was a little more open to that sort of thing and wasn't threatened by some of us younger reporters. And so I have largely good, experiences with him and not some of the tougher stories from earlier in his days. But, you know, I said it, you know, on the day that he passed, like, when Chad announced it in the third quarter of the Vikings game, I just kept looking over to his seat and at US Bank Stadium, you know, several times throughout the game, thinking about how quiet the press box was and how he would have been yelling at Kirk Cousins for throwing an interception or hollering at the referees for some penalty that he thought that they were screwing the Vikings on. And, to think about that not being, something that's going to happen anymore. It really is just not something that I had ever envisioned. And it's just a weird, weird time to think about life without Sid, even though at 100 years old, you knew someday that was going to come. I don't know that I ever believed it.
Well, the great, I talked about this a little bit yesterday. I don't know if it was with Royce or not, that at games, and you know this pretty well, yeah, at games, there was no one on press row. In the so-called glory days, the Star Tribune, if it was me, Sid and Royce across, none of us were as negative about the team if it was going badly than Sid. It was the great irony of it. It rarely showed up in print that way. But in fact, even if they were up 20, he'd go, "Don't, they're going to lose this game. They better score one more time before the half. They're going to lose." And it was, and a lot of it also was for the officials. You're right. When he wasn't ripping the home team, he was ripping the officials, but it was constant, his barrage on whether it be a quarterback, the defense, the coaching, whatever, the place kicker used to get it a lot. It was almost like, I mean, that was the fan in him, where it was what you might expect from your average Rube, who's just showing that the range of emotions that we associate more with them than we generally associate with people covering the team or covering the game.
Yeah, I mean, he just wanted the team to win so badly.
Yes.
And when they performed poorly, no one was more hurt or upset by it than Sid. And then no one was more bracing for the bad news that all fatalistic Minnesota sports fans have than Sid was. But then, of course, you'd get to the press conference after he had, you know, kind of tarred and feathered everyone in the press box. And then the coach would come up and say, "Well, you know, you can't lose player X, or, you know, your backup long snapper was hurt, and so you had no chance." And he would give all the outs and all the excuses you could possibly think of for for whatever failures had happened, it both, you know, in the press conference and the way he asked questions, and then also in his column. So he definitely ran the roller coaster that way, and it was highly entertaining to watch the stages of Sid from the start of a game to the end of a game, and then on through the press conferences in the locker room afterward. You know, it was a show unto itself, and you couldn't help but get a kick out of it, just the way that that he went about his business.
I don't know if I've told you this story before, but I have said it on the air several years ago, involving Ed Hightower, the official, the referee, the basketball referee. So yeah. I'm at a Gopher game at Williams Arena. This had to have been early in my tenure because I just wasn't prepared for any of it. And I'm sitting next to Sid. This is back when you could sit in those seats right, you know, at the base or down or on the I should say on the 50-yard line or close to it. They changed all that over the last several years. I think they sell those seats now and they have the media elsewhere up higher, I think. But anyway, there's a call that goes against the Gophers, and Hightower makes the call, or Hightower was the closest to where we were, our vantage point. And Sid starts absolutely screaming at the top of his lungs about the call. I mean, obscenities. I mean, he's losing his mind yelling at this referee. And of course, this is my first experience around this, because at no other place had I worked had there been somebody in the media capable of this kind of behavior. And I'm looking around like, am I being punked? This isn't real, right? This guy can't be doing this, right? Well, the upshot was, at the start of the second half, I'm figuring, by the way, you know, Hightower, he's got to hate this. He's like, this is unprofessional. He's going to call him for a technical foul. Before the second half starts, Hightower trots over to shake Sid's hand. And I'm going, what? Wait a minute, that's the same guy who was MFing the referee. That referee at Hightower, what are you doing? But it's not, I don't say it to rip or to praise so much as to, I think, further confirm the irrepressibility of the presence. That it's just the way it was. And so somehow Hightower had figured out a long time, that's it. That's just what he does. And it's sort of grandfathered in for whatever reason. But it couldn't have bothered him that much because you don't necessarily make a point to come over and shake his hand, you know, if it's something that's really bugging you. But it almost was like, well, that's just Sid, and I got a relationship with him, and that's just part of the deal with Sid.
Yeah, I think just his longevity obviously was his best friend because, you know, any of else of us, if we would have done the same thing, we would have been out of there.
Correct.
In a heartbeat. But everyone just said, well, that's Sid. You just got to deal with Sid that way. And he earned that in some ways by just beating down the doors the way that he did earlier on in his career. But, you know, we talk about these things, Dan, and how kind of, you know, forceful he was in those situations, and how he would yell at a referee or he'd yell at another reporter or things like that, in press conferences. But one thing that I actually always got a kick out of and thought was interesting, and I think Louis said this with you yesterday, was that for as much grief as he caused other people, the best thing you could do with Sid is give it back to him.
Absolutely.
He absolutely loved when, you know, someone would give him a shot, you know, a zinger that kind of came right back at him and challenged him a little bit in the court of public opinion, because nobody likes to hold court before a big press conference like Sid. You know, if we would be introducing a GM, a player, whatever, everyone's crowded into this big room, you know, and then Sid's cracking the jokes, whoever he sees, hey, Mr. Shirts, hey, Mr. This, that, and, you know, hey, you found a girlfriend yet, Mr. AP,
right.
He would tell me, and, you know, you'd zing something back at him, and he'd just laugh, and he reveled in that. And so as thin-skinned as he could be or things like he could take it as much as he dished it out, and I think he liked doing that.
Had to battle it with him. Well, as odd as this sounds, I think the Vikings have got a decent amount of grief for a horrific performance Sunday, but I think some of it was tempered a bit because the Sid news, quite frankly, breaking, and because now the Vikings are on a bye. But let's get to it. I mean, I think I already thought the season was over at 0-3. I really did in a fundamental way. But now at 1-5 with after losing to Atlanta, I look at it more as I'm not going to get into the permutations of how many playoff teams there are and what kind of run they could get on, so much as they don't deserve to be talked about that way or to even have that kind of conversation. It's an insult to other teams when you're sitting at the position they're in and you're capable of getting routed again, not for the first time this season, by a team that has no business beating you. I don't care how many coaches they fired or how many general managers they fired. It was, I don't know if it's the worst under Mike, but it's got to be close to the top three.
Oh, for sure it does, Dan. And, you know, that's I ended my remembrance that I wrote of Sid yesterday at The Athletic and just saying that, you know, the sports front of the Star Tribune was just Sid's tape recorder. And I said, you know, the last act that he had for his beloved Minnesota sports teams was pushing that embarrassment off of the front page of the paper.
Right.
By, you know, dying on the day that he did. But it was that bad, Dan. I mean, I remember a Colts game a couple of years ago,
right,
where they just got run out of the building at home.
The Buffalo game, maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And that the Buffalo game, and even the Eagles game, of course. But when you look at, it's not even just losing that game, obviously, but Weber put it the right way. I mean, that was a team that didn't show any heart, that didn't show any effort, that didn't really show up at all. And that's where the big concern is. And that's where you totally take yourself out of, well, if you win a couple of these games coming out of the bye, maybe you're back in it. No, the way that team performed against a reeling Atlanta team, that had shown that it could find any way possible to get beaten. And they came out and controlled it from the start. That to me shows that this is a team, and I said it with you last week on the radio, Dan, that I thought after the win at Houston and then after the fairly good showing in Seattle, I thought we were looking at 6-10, 7-9, 8-8 rather than 3-13. But I have to eat my crow there. I think that we're heading back toward real disaster here, because that was as unprofessional a performance as we have seen under Zimmer. And it doesn't really bode well, because I don't know how many strings can be pulled with this roster coming out of the break to say that we're going to see anything better. I mean, it was just really glaring from start to finish.
I don't even know for me if it's a heart issue so much as, to me, it felt more like ineptitude. It just felt like they were awful, and they're suddenly flummoxed by it. Now, again, Atlanta's got some weapons offensively. We know that. But a team that seemed utterly incapable of even participating. And I still believe there was too much self-congratulation about the Seattle game. And they won't admit to it. They'll never acknowledge that, no, it's about winning. But just the way they spoke last week, I think they congratulated themselves way too much about playing what was an artful game, and it was a nice comeback, but a game that they ultimately lost, as almost as if, well, we're all set up now. We have found our way. We've kind of found our identity again. And it's like, give me a break. I mean, that we got to raise the standard a little bit. Early, I mentioned I'm done ripping Kirk, because I think at some point, first of all, he's not as bad as he played this last week. I'm not a Kirk Gobel, but I can acknowledge that much. The problem here to me, though, at some point, it's like with a lot of these calls and these personnel moves, I'm left with the opinion that I've had from the beginning that Cousins is who he is, and they needed to know it and should have known it. And so it's on them, if not for first investing in him, for doubling down on that investment with the contract extension, that you can blame him if you want, because he's making the plays and he was awful in this game. But somebody gave him the opportunity to get extended, and somebody gave him the chance to have the football to the degree that he does. And that goes back to judgment that makes no sense on a team, especially that has continued issues along the offensive line, that the fit never made sense. So I think more of the criticism should be on whatever that thought process was that said, he's our only way out of the box, A, and B, we got to double down on it, even if it's going to put us in salary cap hell, if we actually want to, you know, move on and get past him as early as the year 2021, which I don't think now isn't even an option, correct?
I agree. Just given the way that the contract is structured and the money hit that they would take by getting rid of him,
right,
they're really stuck with him. And so I think you're right, Dan, in terms, and it's twofold in terms of the indictment from the evaluation process with Kirk Cousins. One is, remember back, Dan, to the Case Keenum decision and, you know, what they decided after that Philadelphia game was Case Keenum, nice player, but we have a Super Bowl window here. We need to go out and get someone better. And he is not the guy to take us over that hump. And that's fine. You can make that decision. And really, they it's not like Case Keenum has made anybody throw after with what he's done after. So that's fine. You make that decision. But then they bring in Cousins. And you can argue that this last summer, they were facing the same decision. Like, you had enough tape on Kirk Cousins to know what he was.
And what he was,
you could go with them,
right?
And they decided to double down instead. And so not only did they decide to double down and make the mistake that way, rather than say, "Hey, look, we can't go any further than we've gone with Kirk Cousins. We need to go find someone else." But then you go into the season with Sean Mannion and no other viable backups in case things go wrong. And to me, that's as almost as much of an indictment as anything. There should have been a draft pick at some point invested in a quarterback. There should have been, or you go the Jameis Winston, Cam Newton route,
right,
where you get a distressed asset on the street and say, let's take a look at this guy and see it. But they don't have that either.
No, not at all.
And so it's been just one mishandling of quarterback after another for this regime through the outset, except for maybe Teddy Bridgewater, where they had bad luck. Otherwise, it's been an absolute disaster at the quarterback position, the most important position in football. And I think in their heart of hearts, Dan, when they went to make that decision with Cousins, they said, I don't know, how can we find another one? You know, how can we do it? And they're a little gun shy with it. And they said, are we at least going to go with the devil we know? And it's, you know, now they've painted themselves into a corner in a major way that's going to make things really hard to dig out of.
He's untradeable. There's no one who's going to trade for him with this contract.
No.
You know, some people have continually pointed to the Niners because they like him. But that's, and if for some reason Garoppolo, you know, kind of caves in, but not at that price. I just don't think there's any chance now. They've made that all but impossible. And as I said, they can't move on him next year. I guess they knew they were going to put him on the bench, a $40 million quarterback on the bench. Man, it's not good. It's quite a mess.
And the other thing, Dan, real quick, just the other thing is, like, you have heard some whispers that they didn't want to bring in a guy who would challenge Cousins because they wondered about his psyche and how he would handle that. If you have that question about your starting quarterback,
you've answered your own deal. That's right. That's exactly it. That's 100% true. By the way, is KG writing a book?
I just heard that today. Someone called me today, and I haven't seen the actual post, but someone called me today and said that he posted on Instagram or something that he's writing a book coming out early next year. Mm. KG A to Z, the uncensored, you know, autobiography or whatever it is. So,
sorry, KG fan.
I'm sure there will be some very
well, there could be
comments in there directed.
Who's the ghostwriter? Do you know yet?
I have to find that out.
Okay.
I'm offended that he didn't ask me, honestly.
Yeah, I am too. I would be very, I mean, that's bulletin board material for you.
Without question. Yeah. Maybe it's Hap. You know, maybe it's his guy. We'll see. That's the real question, is who is kind of pulling the wordsmith strings behind the scenes and how is that going to be structured? Cause I'd love to be a fly on the wall for those interviews.
That could be juicy. Like you said, depends on what he does and how revealing he wants to be, right? That's the question.
You know, he's not going to hold back.
I wouldn't think, knowing him.
That's the one thing. He will give his version of the event at straight as he sees them. And so I don't think it will be a diplomatic book at all. And there will be plenty of headlines that are generated from it. How accurate is his portrayal?
That's fair.
The interesting part of this thing.
Yeah. February 16th, 2021.
It will be juicy.
Feb 16, Gardz, he says.
Yep,
2021.
I'm looking at the post now.
Right after Valentine's
Day. Well, you better get on the list now, Gardz.
You can pre-order your copy today at the link in his bio on Instagram.
He's got to do the circuit, doesn't he? That's the one way. He'll make himself available, right? He's going to want to sell it.
No doubt, he'll do that. He did the same thing with the movie that he did.
That's true.
And he makes
the all right. So he'll do Simmons podcast. What else is he going to do, Johnny?
Will he do anything local?
We'll have to do the Athletic sit down.
The oral history of the book. There's no doubt about that. That's for sure. Well, I hope we get him. It'd be nice to definitely be nice to get him. That's true. Actually, that's 100% true. You're right. Thank you, sir. We will chat next week.
You got it, Dan. Thanks.
That's Johnny Athletic. Joins us every Tuesday during the football season. Why don't we come back, Gardzi, and name our first Snownami? Are you kidding? Yeah, it's history being made. It's got to be our earliest.
I want to do that when we come back, but I was on Instagram for the KG thing.
Yeah?
There's an Instagram post, you will not believe, Kirk Cousins related, that we need to get to also.
Is there nudity involved?
Well, I wouldn't believe that. No, that's not where my mind went right away. But there's an unbelievable Kirk Cousins Instagram post that we must discuss.
I can't wait.
And now, famous moments in a
kick-ass offense.
You know, from the start, you win the toss, you took the ball, you normally defer. What was the thinking behind that?
Well, I knew that the first play we're going to kind of take a shot, and so I wanted to try and get things going a little bit, but you can bet we'll never do that again.
Join us again for another famous moment in a
kick-ass.